History is not very fond of bystanders. History rather stands in judgment on them for what they did, or rather, when the chips were down, what they did not do. What hurts the victim most is not the cruelty of the oppressor, but the silence of the bystander, says Romanian-born American writer, professor, political activist, Nobel laureate and Holocaust survivor Eli Wiesel. Most evil in the world is only partly caused because of an evil person. Most of it is because of the complicity of bystanders, warns Tim Kaine, the American lawyer and politician, junior United States Senator from Virginia since 2013. The horror of the Holocaust is not that it deviated from human norms. The horror is that it didn't. What happened may happen again to others, not necessarily Jews, perpetrated by others, not necessarily Germans. We are all possible victims, possible perpetrators, possible bystanders. Yehuda Bauer, an Israeli historian and scholar and the author of the book Rethinking the Holocaust. Not looking so good to play the role of a bystander. The definition of a bystander is a person who is present at an event or incident but does not take part. It happens whenever there are incidents and moments. It may have been part of your experience when something happened, you saw it, but you were not involved personally. An altercation on a train, a robbery, an accident, moments, incidents and accidents. There are certainly some key bystander moments in the build-up to Easter. We read about the problem on Palm Sunday. No donkey. No donkey, no parade. No donkey, no symbolism. No revisiting the imagery and power of that reenactment of the prophecy of Zechariah about the king, the new kind of king, humble and riding through the ruins of Jerusalem, pledging the impossible dream of a new beginning, a rebuilt city, offering hope from the back of a donkey. So the presence of a donkey was de rigueur for this precious and special demonstration of who he was. As the disciples go about the business of coming by a donkey, we read some of the bystanders ask them, "What are you doing?" This historic moment about to erupt on the city, and they are hanging about and give no indication of their considering participation in what is about to unfold, the start of a tumultuous week in the story of Israel as her king comes to upset apple carts and to change the world. It's going to happen. It will be historic, crucial, important, but it is literally going to pass them by. Bystanders, strangely, for all that they are invariably one remove from the action, had a pivotal role in the story of Peter and his moment of dreadful dereliction, throwing in their four pennyworth, they almost come in from the edges. But we know it's really Peter's pain that is the story, his feelings, his shame. Peter being challenged by the servant girl in the high priest's courtyard. "He's one of them," she tells the folk gathered round the fire. A little while later, Mark records, the bystanders accuse Peter again. "You cannot deny that you are one of them, because you too are from Galilee." Peter crumbles, his bravado melted, his assurances void and meaningless, his shame profound, and the cock crows a second time. As events unfold, another bystander is sucked into the drama, Simon of Cyrene. The city scared him. There was a feeling about the place, an edge that chilled his soul. You could smell the hate, hatred of the oppressor, hatred of the shame, hatred of themselves, hatred of foreign influences. The worst time of the year to be there too, some annual festival in full progress, the streets heaving with pilgrims and the air thick with a cacophony of accents and languages, cultures crashing into each other like cattle in a marketplace. Jerusalem, city of mystery and international trade, city trembled and trembling with unfulfilled ambition, city crippled with the shame of Rome's footprint on its neck. On that day, the day in question, he had time to be the tourist, take in the temples and the amphitheatres and the street hawkers, the hubbub of the marketplace. Absent-mindedly, he gazed around, breathed in the atmosphere, drank in the mood. Though he was well-travelled, he could still feel that childish sense of wonder that here he was in Jerusalem. Brilliant. He could never really understand how other people lived their lives, organised their societies. All he wanted was to go about his business, live his life in peace, keeping a sense of proportion, causing no one any bother, staying clear of trouble, passion and enthusiasm, religious fervour. These were things that puzzled and perplexed him. And this ancient city, this hotbed of religious fervour, was a tinderbox of religious passion, loyalties and theologies locked in conflict. The traditionalists, the priests, the Pharisees, the zealots, the Sanhedrin, every flavour, shade and style, from the completely bonkers to the totally weird and all points in between. He understood that religion had its uses, its role to play as the social moral glue, but not for him, religion that got up close and personal. He would nod politely in the general direction of good social order and business integrity, but please don't ask him to get involved, to feel any personal feelings about God or the gods, about believing. The crowd caught him up like a huge wave and swept him into the narrow street. He had no idea what the commotion was about, but he was powerless to hold against the press of the people. Almost crushed against the stone wall of a shop front, he pushed and elbowed with an uncharacteristic aggression to the front of the thronging crowd. The noise was deafening. The boos and jeers of one section, the haunting wails of the woman, the harsh bark of the nervous soldiers as they forced a passage up the cramped confines of the narrow market street. Something was afoot. But he had no desire to find out what it was. What he didn't want to do, above all, was to get involved. He caught the glint of sunshine on metal as a phalanx of soldiers bundled the man through the crowds. They were getting nearer. And what he saw there, sickened him. The man, if you could call him that, back bloodied, face puffed and discoloured, a cruel thorny crown jammed unceremoniously in his head. Blood caked his face, his eyes barely open. Someone had given him a good going over. Exhausted, broken, the man staggered under the crossbeam. Simon of Cyrene wanted to look away, but the sight of this wrecked person was strangely compelling, like a defining moment of cruelty and inhumanity. And all the while, the unrelenting, unforgiving wailing of the women and the twisted, angry faces of the crowd and the anxious, stern faces of the soldiers hoping to the gods to get this nightmare over with and soon. Then the man fell. Right in front of Simon, the man fell under the weight of the crossbeam. His body ruined by the beatings, unable to take one more step, he crumpled. Simon was no saint, just a human being, and his instinct was kindly to reach out to help the man with his impossible load. Then, realising what he was doing, realising to his horror that he was actually getting involved, he drew back, but it was too late. The sharp-eyed sergeant was onto him. "Right, Mr. Goody Two-Shoes, kindly heart, want to help the Jew boy? Fine, get this on your back." And suddenly the bystander was unable to stand by. From observing the drama from the front stalls, he was in the drama forever. What a fool! Why did I not just mingle with the crowds and keep my distance? Now I have to go to Calvary with him. Now I'm part of the story and will never be able to shake off this moment, this experience. Now, this time, it's personal. And there are even there at the cross itself, the bystanders, at the holiest moment, when the Christ dies. Mark tells how people passing by shook their heads and hurled insults and shook their heads at Jesus. There are the bystanders, untouched by the moment, with a wry comment, a sneering jibe, a smart quip. Is nothing sacred? Well, to the disengaged bystander, no, nothing is sacred. No sense in reaching the soul with it, touching the heart with it. Not even the cross itself, the death of an innocent man. To witness it is one thing, to witness it, but not to be involved. To know the story, but definitely not be in the story. Safely disengaged. You can describe it in different ways because it still happens. You can have the form of religion, but none of the content. You can be in church, but not be the church. You can be on holiday, visiting a great cathedral, but not kneeling in prayer there, lighting a candle. In, but not really in you. You have the appearance, but not the substance. You choose distance, not closeness. You settle for the external, but avoid the internal. It can happen in worship, depending on where we are in our story. Look at them, we say. See them all sing and pray, but it means nothing to me. We stay aloof when we're the audience, not the actors. That's an emotionally safe place, but it's not much, is it? Sometimes you have to come in from the edges. Sometimes you have to risk your pride, your independence, your stubborn resistance, and come close to the moment. Let the moment come close to you. Come close to this Jesus. And let him come close to you. Enough of being a bystander. It's no longer that story out there. It's now the story in here. It's my story now. Yehuda Bauer dares us to consider this option. He says, I come from a people who gave the Ten Commandments to the world. The time has come to strengthen them by adding three additional ones, which we ought to adopt and commit ourselves to. Thou shalt not be a perpetrator. Thou shalt not be a victim. And thou shalt never, but never, be a bystander.